Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking at falling oil prices and assessing the effect this tumble to a four-year low has had and might continue to exert around the world. We start by considering the imminent meeting of OPEC in Vienna on November the 27th, and considering the potential impact of decisions regarding oil supply that might be taken in Austria. Firstly, how does the decision process there work, and how unified is OPEC these days in any case? Kiran Ganesh, UBS cross-asset strategist, takes up the story.
So, I mean, it'll be a discussion between the sort of the OPEC various ministers of energy, and they'll really be weighing up the pros and cons of cutting production. Now, there's obviously a couple of interesting things at play, because if they really think as a united group, then the right thing for them to do would be to cut production. But then again, all of them would need to make some sacrifice to do that. All of them need to cut their production levels and trust that the other ones will join in. So we imagine it will be a reasonably tense meeting in some ways, but we would ultimately think that they will still act as a group and cut production levels.
So, exactly how unified or fragmented is the group? Marcus George, Iran analyst and reporter based in Dubai, explains.
Certainly, if you look at it from the Iranian perspective, OPEC has been for a number of years a very split, politicized organization. And Iranian officials, when you speak to them, or indeed former officials, they say, well, look, OPEC doesn't really do what it's supposed to, which is look after the economic interests of its members, those founding members, the 12 members that it has. Rather, these days, effectively, what it is to look after the members which have strong relations with the United States, strong relations with the global economy, to ensure that effectively they look after themselves and Western interests.
And Kiran Ganesh concurs.
A number of OPEC countries have gone in different directions in terms of the amount of spending they're doing. So if you look at some places in the Middle East, break-even prices for oil to balance their budgets are well above $100 per barrel. There's differences in the production costs between different countries. So it's certainly less united than it once was, but we still think that they will act as a group.
And this view is shared in the US. Kevin Allison is a columnist at Reuters Breaking Views.
If OPEC manages to unify and agree production cuts, it'll be a miracle. Saudi Arabia has been the only country in OPEC that's modulated supply, apart from some very symbolic moves from some other Gulf state countries over the past few years. Other OPEC producers like Venezuela and Iran just can't afford to cut production to try to get prices back up. Their stressed budgets mean that they need to pump as much oil as possible, no matter what the price. And so I really don't see much potential coming out of the OPEC meeting for a broad OPEC cut. I see a possibility that Saudi Arabia might trim production if it starts to get really nervous about falling prices. But so far, it hasn't given any indication that it's that upset about the price having fallen from about $115 a barrel in June to almost $80 a barrel today.
Saudi Arabia is indeed critical here. Jorge Mariscal is Chief Investment Officer for Emerging Markets in the Wealth Management Division at UBS in New York City.
We at UBS believe that the main concern right now is excess supply, not weak demand. The global economy, particularly the U.S., continues to recover. Europe is gradually coming along. Japan is looking a little bit better. So it's more an issue of supply. And the big swing factor in supply is Saudi Arabia. At what point will they decide to impose some discipline on OPEC? That's a big question mark. We think oil prices are likely to recover in the first quarter of next year, about maybe $10 from current levels. But that will require discipline on the part of OPEC, which so far we haven't seen.
Jorge Mariscal is keen to underline the importance of falling oil prices for emerging markets in particular.
Well, overall, it's a positive impact because the vast majority of emerging markets are net oil importers. However, there are some subtleties. Oil impacts emerging markets through three main channels. First, trade. Obviously, those who export oil would benefit. Those who import oil would hurt. Then inflation. So inflation pressures become lessened with lower oil prices, and that helps central banks achieve their targets and potentially promote countercyclical policies. And third, the fiscal impact. Some governments are heavily dependent on oil. So inflation helps Asia and Latin America and emerging markets in Europe more or less the same way. They all experience lower cost of energy. Trade is a little bit tricky. Russia hurts. Venezuela hurts. The Middle East, of course, gets hurt. And then on the fiscal accounts, I'd say the biggest concerns for us are Venezuela, Russia, potentially Mexico, and even places like Colombia could be negatively affected.
Bob Swarup, the financial commentator and investor and author of Money Mania, echoes this view as it relates to India in particular.
What's interesting is, of course, we look at emerging markets, and I take India as an example. In India, inflation actually dropped to 1.8%. Now, bear in mind that India has had enormous energy and food inflation for the last few years. So for them to have this dramatically low inflation will be extremely positive for growth, because that's a huge part of their cost. You know, India imports most of its energy. Go over to Japan, you know, which is struggling with Abenomics and all sorts of wonderful, weird, wacky experiments in the world of money. For them, at least the one thing they do have is that all this falling energy price will come through in the form of much lower energy costs and food costs ultimately for them. So that's positive. And I think it's positive for emerging markets, it's positive for most economies.
It seems, therefore, that there is some consensus on the winners from tumbling oil prices. But is there a similar prevailing view when it comes to exactly how low the price could drop? Kevin Allison.
I think there's a decent chance that oil prices could dip below $80. That's widely seen as a floor where below that, U.S. shale producers start to have trouble making money. And the conventional thinking is that as soon as it breaches that floor, shale drillers in the U.S. will start to pull back, and therefore prices will naturally correct. But actually, the break-even cost of shale drilling in the U.S. has been falling. It's fallen by $30 a barrel in some shale regions over the past 2 years. And so I think there's potential for the price to go even lower. I do think that longer term, if oil stays below $80 a barrel, it will eventually start to affect supply and you will see a price recovery. But that will be because some projects like drilling in the Arctic or in ultra-deep water, which need even higher prices than shale to break even, won't come to fruition. Many of those projects are still in development, so that's a much longer term thing than shale drillers putting down tools and stopping drilling right now because prices are low.
And Bob Swarup.
Well, the price can keep dropping. You know, back in sort of going back to 2008, back then, the oil price dropped by 74%. You know, and of course, if you go back even longer, you know, the edge of today's memory 17 years ago, 1998, $10 a barrel, right? I don't think we get down there, to be fair. But oil can keep dropping. You know, it's a wonderful Keynesian aspect, right? The market can remain irrational far longer than you can stay solvent. I think one has to understand why the oil price might keep dropping. The oil may keep dropping just because there's a glut of it. I doubt that's the real reason. It's more the fact that, you know, if you look at commodities in general, one of the biggest drivers has been China. The fact of the matter is that with China, growth is most definitely slowing as they now try and, you know, get back to a more domestic consumption-driven model. That means that their demand for commodities, the demand for energy, is going to fluctuate a lot. And I think that will come through in commodity prices. It comes through in other prices, certainly.
And here's Kiran Ganesh's view.
You know, moves in the oil price are actually, you know, not clearly a positive for global growth, because they obviously impact growth negatively in some places, the exporters, and positively in others, the importers. So it's not a clear net positive for global growth. But when we are looking for winners and losers, then yes, it is the big consuming economies that are the big winners. So that's places like Japan, places like India, but also the US, which we think is, you know, really the important winner from all of this. You know, the average US family spends $2,600 per year on gasoline, and the decline in prices is, you know, a clear positive for US consumers.
Kiran Ganesh was talking about US consumers and the way that shifts in oil price affect them. Kiran's colleague, Thomas Berner, chief US economist at UBS, has this.
My rule of thumb is for every 10% drop in the price of oil, so let's take the WTI, and it's important that this is a supply side drop, right? Because you don't want to see oil prices fall at the same time that the U.S. economy is decelerating, which I think in this scenario, what we're talking about right now, you've seen oil prices come down quite a bit, but the U.S. economy is actually stay quite strong. So I would, you know, very loosely consider it a supply-side shock in terms of what it means for the consumers. So for every 10% drop in the price of the WTI, you actually boost real consumption in the U.S. by 0.3% after 12 months. And the main channel through which this works is that, you know, nominal income growth stays the same, but you have lower CPI inflation, sometimes even negative as we've seen over the past few months. And that filters through to stronger real disposable income, which then again lifts overall real consumption, which again obviously through its effect as a component of the GDP lifts overall real GDP growth.
Kevin Allison, meanwhile, gives the verdict from Chicago.
It is definitely a positive development. The 30% fall in the price of oil means that gasoline is becoming cheaper for consumers, especially for consumers on the lower end of the income scale. That can make a huge difference. And so I think that the view from Chicago is this is a good development for America's struggling consumers. And it's also a good development, I think, for the domestic sort of energy sector. It's a validation that America's shale industry really has emerged at the forefront of oil production.
And this is Monocle's transport editor, Tristan McAllister's outlook from New York.
Well, car sales are up. A lot of the manufacturers here not only have taken advantage of new engine technologies, but they've also taken advantage of an American want for SUVs again. People are spending money, and we have new SUVs on the market that are more fuel efficient, and all those things sort of conspire to make it so people are very interested in their cars. Not that they haven't been over the past few years, but I think people are thinking, oh, well, I can do that. And also, one of the things we're hearing a lot about here in the U.S., especially, is energy independence. We're hearing about, you know, that, of course, it's a term thrown around by politicians, but just this idea that the amount of oil that the U.S. now could export, the amount of oil that the U.S. can now depend on from itself, is fairly significant compared to what it used to be.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look in more detail at U.S. energy independence and what falling crude costs mean for shale production. In terms of U.S. energy, the development of the shale industry has been one of the critical recent developments. Thomas Berner again.
I think the key difference between today, and this is what we're just talking about the consumer right now, and that's the main effect, but obviously an offset that you're seeing today that you would have not seen, say, 5 years or longer ago, is that you have a negative effect on shale oil and gas exploration and investment. So as you know, that industry has increased quite a bit. I mean, it's only about that part of the economy is only about 11% of business fixed investment, or only about in size 1% of real GDP. So you would have to see a huge drop in investment in that sector for it to make a difference. But it offsets to some degree the beneficial impact on the consumer. So the total net effect of lower oil prices on real GDP growth this time around is lower than it was 5 years or earlier.
Kevin Allison, meanwhile, goes further. He suggests that it is shale producers rather than OPEC at all that are shaping prices.
I do think it is consumers. There's a broad consumer stimulus that's coming from lower prices as they trickle down from oil into petrol and other types of economic inputs. It's a very hard kind of thing to track, but we've come off of 5 years where the oil prices averaged over $100 a barrel. A drop of 30% is a major impact, and I think that that's where it'll mostly be felt. Whether it's really perceived is hard to say, but you should start to see some stronger economic growth. Now, the one caveat is that to the extent that oil prices are also falling not just because of shale, but because of worries about Chinese growth, it may be even harder to kind of see the impact, but that's where it will really be felt, is in people's pocketbooks.
Before we get the client view, let's hear an investor's perspective. Here's Bob Swarup again.
If I had to look at it from an investment point of view, I would say I would be long some emerging markets, India in particular. I think it's very positive for them. I would, on the other hand, also worry enormously about countries that are dependent on oil, and you start to go short them. So you'd probably end up going short Russia, you probably go short Venezuela, places like that. Thirdly, you probably also see opportunities of stress that get created within individual companies in the US economy, for example, within the Russian economy, and areas like that. And those are, again, areas where, you know, there would be investment positions you could take playing on some of those themes.
That was Bob Swarup's Investor's View. Now, with a closing thought from Zurich, is UBS cross-asset strategist Kiran Ganesh with the programme's regular Client View.
So we're looking medium term. Obviously, a lot will depend on this meeting in a couple of weeks' time in Vienna with the OPEC ministers. We're assigning a two-thirds probability to them cutting production and one-third that they keep production levels the same. So when we're talking with clients, we're saying, look, taking an outright position in oil is a risky thing to do because there is significant uncertainty in the near term. What we are advising clients to do is say, look, volatility in oil has increased a lot. Perhaps you could look at selling some protection in oil away from the current price, you know, maybe at around $60 to $70. That would enable you to buy oil at a cheaper price if it declines to those levels. And if it doesn't, it gives you a chance to pick up some yield, which is something our clients are always looking to do.
Kiran Ganesh. And that brings us to the end of this sixth edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or tune in via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.